Quasi.
Hey Vanessa, how are you doing today?
Good. I'm glad it worked out.
Awesome. I like that painting in the back.
Oh, right. I figured it was good for the interview. A little like
Huh?
ask.
Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Oh, it's actually, hold on. What? Oh. How about now?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you
Okay,
hear me?
perfect. Yep. Loud and clear. How have you been?
Good. Yeah, just like, whew, everything's changed, like 180 transformation since joining the program. So it's been really good. Busy.
In what way has it changed?
My Instagram account blew up. Like I was at 8,000 followers, and then I had a reel that went viral, and I went to like almost 60,000
What?
nonstop discovery calls, clients. Like I had two, I think two 25K months, and then I had a 50K month.
What?
And then December, I went back down to two. I almost was like gonna, December was, you know, like sometimes you peak and then you go, you
Yeah,
have a, yeah. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this again. What is this? You know, I was getting in some limiting beliefs. And then December, I was like, you know what? You can't go to zero again. You're going to disappoint Kwasi. Like, let's go. And so then I hit 30K this month. But I feel my
what do you
hurdle.
mean you hit 30K this month and
Oh, no,
it's
sorry,
January
not
3rd?
last month,
Oh,
December.
okay.
Yeah, no,
So that's
it's
pretty cool. That's
like, woo.
it's not bad at all.
Yeah, so it's been great.
That's amazing. When you started off, you were at 5K a month.
Yeah, really struggling around
That
five.
was 6 months ago.
It was 6 months ago since I started. Wow.
Yeah. I just checked on close, like when you booked the call and when you joined.
Oh,
Yeah, that was 6 months ago.
wow. Oh my gosh, crazy.
Yeah. What changed?
It was definitely confidence in myself for sure. The confidence, belief that I was undercharging for sure. So Adam really supported me in that. And then I think it was just the mindset around discovery calls, like learning how to close sales calls, learning how to do the discovery calls and close them, and feeling confident in myself, feeling confident in my program. And then a big thing was mindset around just knowing that I could attract the ideal clients from my Instagram audience. 'Cause there would be some times where I'd like continually get like a client, you know, in like somewhere in Africa and then somewhere, you
So
know,
like
in,
un financially unqualified clients, right?
yeah, exactly. Like I'd continually get those, but then
Yeah.
it would send me into a downward spiral with mindset. And it wasn't until I got your mindset program that I would like, okay, just like stay, like don't let that affect you. Just keep neutral about that. Stay focused on
Right.
that. I've attracted high quality clients before, and then like it stopped affecting me. And now I just like always attract really high quality clients. It's crazy.
Wait, so are you the only one taking calls right now, or do you have a sales rep?
I'm the only one doing everything. I haven't hired. I'm gonna hire. I think I need to hire a DM setter. Yeah,
Is your like,
a setter, right? Yeah,
Yeah, an appointment setter or
an appointment setter. Yeah.
outbound, what is it? Outbound rep,
Yeah.
something like that. So you're
Yeah,
mostly getting calls inbound from your Instagram.
I don't, at the moment I don't even promote the program because I'm still behind, like 20 messages behind that I haven't responded to. So my next level is just working with, I still get this like low level overwhelm and
Yeah.
anxiety, and I feel like I'm sure I could be hitting like 50K months consistently, but I feel paranoid about growth, next level growth, like holding that many women.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't know. There's a lot of anxiety. Like, will everyone get the attention they need? Will, but I'm just trying to work with like, okay, let's just get to the next level. Let's just get to 15 women per group. Right now I have, I think about eight in two. So I switched the model to the business model to what we spoke of.
So you made a lot of changes. So okay, let's go back to 6 months ago when you're making 5K a month. How long were you kind of hovering around that level?
I think the most I'd ever made was 10K, but pretty much like my whole journey, my whole career, or the last like whatever, 5, 6 years coaching, was struggling around that.
No way. So you started, did you started 5, 6 years ago?
Yeah, like 5, 6 years, but it was always, I mean, it probably had like one or two, like a 10, 15K month, but never, like I
Right.
never 25K,
Were you
never.
doing the exact same thing for 5, 6 years, or did you do more in person, or?
I was doing more, I didn't yet have my program, was the big thing. So I was mostly doing like some one-on-one stuff. And then I was really underselling though, and undercharging was the
What do
big thing.
you mean by like undercharging?
Like I think I was charging like $1,000 or something for my program, and yeah. Oh, I actually did it one time with how much? But I think the biggest thing was I rewrote the program too. I went much deeper into like inner work, trauma work. Like it
Right.
mostly just focused on dating and feminine energy, but once I decided, like, made that commitment to myself that I was going to actually do the trauma work, it was
Yeah.
like suddenly a flood of people came in.
Isn't that crazy? It's like when you make a commitment to a particular path, you're like, you know
Yeah.
what? I'm gonna do this. Everything starts to fall into place.
Yeah. It was really what was holding me back. Like, I was always like, no, I don't want to talk about trauma. I don't want to do trauma work. Like, and then as soon as like, okay, fuck it, I'm gonna do trauma work. And then
Yeah.
it was like, it was almost like subconsciously all the clients could hear me and feel me, and energetically they were like, okay, she's really gonna give us the medicine, like the real inner work. Because I've had clients make, like, one woman came to me. I mean, this has always been like my heart's deepest desire to work with, but a woman who had sexual abuse from a stepfather,
Yeah.
and in 2 months found her man. Like, she had been attracting men from all these core wounds and all this, unhealed trauma. And 2 months, like, she had of course done, I mean, everyone who comes to my program has done significant inner work, but
Yeah.
it was like the next level of awareness and healing that she needed, and that her man just like showed up in her life. It was so beautiful. Like, everything that she described, her love vision, the kind of guy she wanted.
Isn't that crazy? It's like we notice a lot of this with our clients too. It's like, and also with some of the friends that I have, they keep attracting men who they don't want. It's like,
Oh.
but it's this, it's the same pattern of men. It's the
Yeah.
same
Yeah.
kind of abusive partner, whether
Oh,
it be
yeah.
emotionally or physically, and it's one after the next. And it's like, it's abusive, but sometimes the form changes, you know, goes from just like verbally and emotionally to like
Yeah.
actual physically. Why does that happen?
Well, it's from, so usually we will attract people again from the same parental and generational dynamics, what we witnessed. And so not only the way your parent treated you, that creates like the love blueprint, but also the way you witnessed your parents treat each other. And then we also adopt unconscious core wounds. And so I realized, like, I had a pattern of attracting narcissistic men, even after all the inner work I was doing, but I had this unconscious core wound, kind of, that I'm like, I'd show up in relationship feeling helpless, like I needed a man to save me unconsciously, because I had a lot of verbal abuse in childhood. And so, and then of course the narcissistic kind of man who's like very controlling, dominant, is perfect match for someone who's unconsciously showing up kind of helpless, needing to be saved, right? And it would just be like the perfect, and that was the core wound also that was showing up in my business. I did, not only did your program, which was totally like just made radical shifts, but I did this next level inner work myself and saw that core wound. I was like subconsciously operating out of this like victim energy a little bit, was keeping me stuck.
So
But
how did you, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
go ahead. No.
No, I was really curious to know, 'cause you have a very interesting story, and I don't know if that's how you got into it or not, but you were almost close to getting married, right? But
Yeah,
then
that was before I hadn't done any inner work at that time. And
can you share that story? I actually just want to know.
I was in a lot of victim energy, a lot of like looking to be saved. We met at a charity event,
Okay.
and he drove
When
up in
was
my,
this? What year?
oh gosh, like maybe it was my late 20s. I'm 38 now, and I was probably 28, 26,
Okay.
late. But I was working in a job in tech that I hated and kind of, you know, also felt the pressure that most women feel in the late 20s, like, oh, I got to get married.
Right.
And he was obsessed with me. He just adored me and it felt really safe. But he was an entrepreneur. I was obsessed with entrepreneurs too. And he drove my favorite Aston Martin. So I was like a little bit.
It's always the Aston Martin. That's always.
Is this the Aston Martin? and he just adored me. He was like really, but then eventually I could just walk all over him. I could become really controlling. And I still had that pattern. I was still, I think, you know, I had a lot of low self-worth. So the kind of guy that I really wanted would have been deeply attracted to. I would have definitely pushed him away, reenacted a lot of my wounding with my father. So in a lot of ways it felt safe and it felt like he could rescue me too from a job I hated in that way. And then as a month before the wedding, I started having anxiety attacks, panic attacks, couldn't breathe. Eventually called it off. Yeah. Because I could sense that his dad was the alpha male and like I had a lot of authority issues too, especially with men. And I just felt like he couldn't stand up to his dad. And that brought up even more anxiety for me. And so then I ended up I called it off, ended up going to therapy. And that was kind of the trajectory that got me into grad school. My therapist at the time was like, you should go check out this Pacifica Graduate Institute. They go into all this around depth psychology. I already had an interest in Carl Jung and all of that. And yeah, that was kind of what started my personal growth journey.
And then how did you get into coaching?
When I started graduate school, I met a friend there who was also in the same program. And he worked with this woman named Alana Pratt, who was a coach. Yeah. And I saw her, and immediately when I saw her website, it was like, oh, that's who I want to be. I want to do what she's doing.
What made you like want to get into coaching?
I saw like how much more money you can make. And I was already doing the clinical training that you do in therapy. And it was like, I don't want to be a therapist, sit here in like an office, like exchanging money for time. And like I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to have freedom. I wanted to have abundance. But I knew I was a healer. I knew like the kind of therapy hat person is who I was. But I was like, no, I'm also meant to make a lot of money living my soul's purpose.
Right.
That was always like, I just didn't know how to get there. But I knew one day if I never gave up, I would get there.
Right, right. So marriage, almost marriage. Grad school, therapy, entrepreneurship.
Yeah. And then it was a long struggle for, I mean, good. I think like I've been on Instagram, probably 6 years or so. And it took a long time for it to, take off, but just like consistent posting, building an audience. And then just like within the last 6 months, I had two reels that went viral around like masculine, feminine energy, masculine needs. And it's very polarizing.
Yeah.
Like polarity work is very polarizing.
Polarizing works though. That's what social media is about. Like everyone's trying to feel something, right?
Yeah. So some people are just like really offended and pissed off about it, and some people love it, and so it's great.
And honestly, Vanessa, when we first spoke and I kind of looked into your work, I was immediately like, oh my God, she's doing God's work. You know, because the way you kind of communicate the dynamic between masculine and feminine, you know, that's what I personally feel that's what it should be like. So can you explain a little bit about like your main ideology and like what you basically do?
Well, mostly teach women to usually high achieving, successful, career driven women to reconnect to their feminine in relationships. So sometimes it can be just because that's the way they've approached their career. And so they think, well, this has got me success in my career. I'm just going to go about it and like make it happen in relationships. But they end up being in their masculine energy in relationships. So just, you know, leading, planning, in that pursuing energy. And they don't realize that that repels men who are embodied in their masculine, men who are embodied in their masculine will just not be turned on by that. But
right.
they end up attracting more passive feminine men who are responsive to a woman leading and pursuing. And then they end up, you know, being in that marriage for however many years or relationship and realize they end up feeling frustrated, burnt out, because when a feminine essence woman is operating out of her masculine, it leads to burnout, frustration, overwhelm. Yeah, and it's not sustainable in the long haul. So I recommend, I love when women are in their masculine in their career, mm-hmm. and I celebrate women's masculine energy, but you take that into a relationship and it's going to depolarize the relationship and lead to either, you know, friendship at best.
I was actually talking to my my coach about this, my personal trainer, and he's like 65, he's seen it all. And he has all of these like female clients who are always complaining about how they can't find a man. And, you know, he told me this, he was like, yeah, a lot of women these days, they're trying to wear the pants and the skirt in the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're trying to be the masculine and the feminine. And then they burn out, like you mentioned. And then they just get frustrated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've spoken about the effects of what happens when women embody their masculine in a relationship. But what happens, what do you think happens when males embody their feminine in a relationship?
So when a masculine man is in his feminine, it usually leads to, like, you know, lack of direction, focus,
uncertainty.
Yeah. Not trusting themselves. Right. So that's kind of like it comes from his own wounding, just like a woman when she's in her masculine, it's coming from her lack of belief that she's worthy of being pursued and chosen. So she leans forward and chases the man versus staying with the man. When he's in his feminine, he's not trusting that his advances will be received. So his lack of self-worth, his disconnection to his masculine puts him in that feminine and then makes him prime for a woman who's going to be, you know, in her wounded feminine leading pursuit.
Right. So interesting. Why do you think a lot of women are in their masculine nowadays?
The biggest wounding that happened is because of being a parentified child. So they grew up in a household where they had to take on this hyper independence, and, you know, maybe mom or dad was like treating them like a therapist, telling them all their problems, or they're just weren't getting their needs met. And so they took on this hyper independent role and usually learn to not be in touch with their needs, not know how to express their needs. And so they show up in relationships, showing up needless, very independent, taking on that. And sometimes it also is like a societal thing where it's just masculine energy is.
It is, right? Like, it's almost like it's wrong for a woman nowadays to be feminine. You know, it's like, there's a lot of promotion of like, oh, you know, you've got to be an independent woman, and, you know, all that's great, but then it's taken to one extreme pole.
Yes.
Where, you know, you don't know how to balance your masculine energy with your feminine energy and, like, you know, access both aspects of it.
It makes sense, because if you look, like, prior to the feminist movement, women were oppressed, right? Like, I was talking to my mom, and she used to work at IBM, and she said that they had guidelines. Women had to wear skirts and stockings and heels. So it's like, I can see, you know, okay, then the feminist movement came, so that the feminist movement was not about femininity. It was about women reclaiming their masculine, because that was repressed. Women were told you have to be the domesticated housewife. Feminism is a reclamation of masculine energy for women. But then women went too far and took that into relationship and said, I want to be treated as an equal in relationship. And really that, you know, that's that. So that was the movement from, basically, we had these like gender roles of the gender role where she would give up her masculine energy in service to the man's protection and providership, right? She's like giving up her masculine energy. Then we moved to the second stage, which was equality, said, okay, I'm going to own my masculine energy, but I want to be treated as an equal in relationship. And now we're moving to the third stage, where it's women own their masculine in their personal life.
Yeah.
But then she surrenders that in the relationship to his masculine in the relationship.
What do you think the fourth stage is going to be?
I don't know. Is there a fourth? I mean, I guess ideally, right? Like, if you think about it from Jung's perspective of yeah. the full individuation, it is like I think it is the third stage, right? Because it's that path of full individuation where we're both actualizing our full potential in our masculine and feminine, right? Both of those should be fully actualized, right? And
what is
for
it?
the go ahead.
What is it? So in terms of like masculine and feminine dynamics, from your experience and what you've seen working with clients, what does a healthy relationship look like if the man's in his masculine and the woman's in her feminine?
What does it look like? That's a good question.
I know there's obviously different ways in which it can be healthy, and it's always like a dynamic between how two people interact.
Yeah.
But, and everyone's different. But I guess, like, if we talk about the ideal, from your experience, what would you say it would be?
I mean, I think the main thing is you feel him, he's leading. She feels that she can surrender to his masculine energy. She
yep.
feels that he's has the direction, and she feels she can trust his masculine energy enough and his vision for his life that she can surrender to his in the relationship. So a lot of women I notice, like when they're haven't healed their feminine, they just pick men that like don't have a clear direction or vision, that she doesn't even feel safe enough to trust him. And so she like has to stay in charge. Like it doesn't, because you have to, the masculine has to, he has to be embodied enough in his masculine that he brings that level of protection and safety so that she can surrender and let go.
Right.
But I think like sometimes it's just little things, like a man that's willing to just plan vacations, plan dinners, dates, like take that initiative and lead. Like I've heard a lot of women that will just complain that he doesn't lead, he doesn't plan, like he doesn't really have that drive, right? Like that's when a man is in his masculine. I think that the biggest thing is like two people living at their edge in their life. Like that is what's going to create passion in a relationship. Like when you're living at your edge and your partner's living at their edge, which actually requires the woman to also, you know, be connected to her purpose. And like, cause that's going to ignite that, like that inner fire, right? And that fire is what you're going to bring to the relationship for passion. I find if a woman is not connected to her passion, and like, eventually that's going to show up in the relationship in some way. Like having children is the energy can go in that direction for a little bit, but then eventually she's going to have to face that individuation process.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that next. Like, how do you think this dynamic changes when there's children in the relationship? Because sometimes, you know, the masculine has to embody feminine qualities.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what I think. Like when you're rearing kids and, you know, the dad sometimes has to stay at home with the kids and pretty much, like, I don't know what they did in the ancient days, go hunting.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I mean, what do you mean? How it changes with your kids?
Like, how can you still make it healthy? Is basically what I want to know. Like, after you have kids, how can someone like a mother and the father still kindle that passion in their relationship?
Probably still having date nights, still feeling like you're still dating, right? Still pursuing her, courting her.
So it should always, like, that's the healthiest state to be in perpetually, like feeling like you're pursuing her, you're dating her, you're courting her, and she's surrendering to your masculinity. Yeah.
And I think another thing is like, she has to feel his integrity, right, with himself in his life, like his connection to his purpose, his, you know, if he's not in integrity with himself, then that's going to leak into the relationship, right? Because that is his masculinity, his integrity with himself, his connection to his purpose, his focus, his.
Have you read this book? It's called The Way of the Superior Man.
Oh yeah, that's great. Yeah,
David Data. Yeah, have you read it?
Yeah, that's like kind of the foundational work of polarity.
Yeah, it's like there's a lot of, you know, stuff that's that he says in that book that if we read it today, a lot of people would get offended. Like like he says, the man's purpose should be his main thing and the woman is on the side.
Yeah.
Woman cannot be the center of his world.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's not, right? The masculine ideal is freedom, right? Yeah. The feminine is love. So a man more on his masculine side is naturally going to, yeah, prioritize purpose. But I think it's like, but usually they both meet at the same point, right? Because he's prioritizing the purpose as that provider protector for the family. So he actually is doing it for the family. But sometimes you can see women, like I remember, I won't say who, but a friend, I'll say, at one point was like in competition with his purpose. Because she wasn't actually connected yet to her purpose. And so she felt, I think there was also a little bit of fear of like, oh, he has this next level wealth and fame and success. Like, what if he leaves me? That's a big, especially if you're dating while your partner's still going through that, you know, process of like finding themselves.
Yeah.
I think I remember in your mastermind, one guy talking about that too.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about that in that video that I put out.
Yeah. Which is really common, yeah, for couples to go through. Like, it's tough. I mean, I can imagine, like, there's a lot of fears that come up for a woman when she thinks about, like, oh, he's going to have this next level fame and wealth, and can he handle all the next level attention that he's going to get? Because that's when a man's really tested. Like, for you, like, right now, like, you're good looking, you're rich, you have a lot of fame, so now you have, like, all the attention you want, right? But it's like, that's where a man's really tested. So like, is he still in integrity, that commitment to his wife and partner?
So how can a woman like best deal with that, by the way? Like if her man becomes extremely successful, famous, and he happens to be, you know, really good looking and just like the highest in the social, what is it called? The social hierarchy?
Yeah.
Social status. So how can, you know, what's the best way for a woman who's going through that to deal with that?
She has to feel his deep trust, definitely, like that their relationship. He has to like remind her, right, that like she needs to feel him in integrity.
But I think it's also,
yeah, the reassurance, yeah. And I think it's also important for women to also understand that men are naturally going to see attractive women and have a desire to fuck. Like it's part, like I can't, who's the guy,
biology, right?
Yeah, Gary White or some other guy who does, he coaches men, but he was talking about this. But like men have to be able to, if you repress that sexual energy, it will come out in shadow. So you can't, you have to acknowledge it. You have to acknowledge that that sexual energy is there and then know how to transmute that sexual energy up into higher centers, like pulling it up into your heart chakra. And that's what really what Kundalini yoga is doing, is it's teaching you how to
transmutation of sex energy.
Yeah, right. Which is like a bit what Napoleon Hill talks about, that, right?
And yeah.
And I think a lot of men aren't taught that. And so then it does come out in shadow. They don't know, are they, you know, develop porn addictions. They don't know how to be with their sexual energy. And I think women also try to live in this fantasy bubble that like, oh, he's only ever going to desire my body and like never another woman's. But like, that's denying his masculine energy. David Data talks about that, right? Like for him to be connected to his masculine energy, he needs to feel. And for women too, the more, like when I cultivate my sexual energy, the more I feel my own magnetism, my feminine energy.
Right. Stuff is so interesting.
Yeah, right.
Wait, I wanted to ask you, like, how do you think this works in like same-sex relationships? There's obviously a masculine feminine dynamic there.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe I heard, I used to work at Facebook and I had one friend who, he called it, he was gay. He called it beards. And so technically it's like when two men with beards get together, it's, I guess like the term. And he's like, I was asking him about polarity and like gay relationships. And he's like, oh, well, I don't know. I think we're both masculine, but he was actually much the feminine one. He was still a senior engineer, but he was in like the choir. And just, he had that more kind of like a little bit more feminine, like talking about emotions and relationships kind of energy. And his partner, I think, felt like more the masculine. So I do feel like on some subtle level, there always is. I mean, sometimes that you do see, like with lesbians, what do they call it? Lipstick lesbians. Like two very feminine essence women, you know, that are bisexual, that, but usually it's, she's doing it just for a sexual experience and not for a long-term relationship.
Right. So how does that like masculine feminine dynamic work with like two women? Because wouldn't the, if one woman's taken on a masculine energy, or maybe they're not, maybe they're in their feminine and then only in the relationship they take on a masculine dynamic.
Yeah, I've seen women, like, she just naturally, like, her essence, her sexual essence is masculine. And she likes, like, one of my female friends who's a lesbian, she's more like really short hair, dresses more masculine. Like she's very much expresses from her masculine essence.
So do you think relationships could work if like there's a feminine, like a man who's more in his feminine and a woman who's more in their masculine?
Sometimes it can, in a healthy dynamic. Yeah. Sometimes it can work that way, if like a woman just naturally wants to be the one to lead and she more expresses, and he's more like, usually kind of like maybe more the artist, or you know, he's more on like naturally more feminine essence person. It can work.
Yeah, because you see a lot of that in like Eastern Asian like traditions, like especially in Indian traditions, like women are very empowered. They're like riding motorcycles, they're doing everything, they're doing a job, they're taking care of the house. And sometimes you see the man pretty much doing nothing, but usually the man's also working a job. But women are very like extremely empowered in some Southeast Asian traditions.
Yeah, I think with like in Southeast Asian traditions, though, it's more women are still in the feminist movement. They're still like, I'll get a lot of women, Indian women, who will just be like, submit to a man. Are you kidding me? Like,
yeah, no, that's true. That's very true.
They're very different, but I understand, because they're still working for equality in the workplace, in like society. Yeah. So, you know, they're still evolution in masculine, feminine, right, or male, female rights.
Yeah, because I think like with my parents, this is kind of the case. Like my mom was extremely empowered by her parents, because my grandparents had like four daughters. And back then, you know, when you have a daughter being born, it's considered bad luck, because it's like, who's going to take care of the parents? You know, women aren't so empowered. And so they really educated her. Like they treated their daughters like they were boys.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so they're extremely empowered, extremely successful career wise.
Yeah, where's your family from?
Bangladesh originally.
Oh, wow. Oh, beautiful. Yeah. What was your religion that you grew up with?
Muslim.
Oh, that's what I thought, because I saw you celebrating. I can't remember.
Yeah,
there we go. Wow. And then how did you just like were very open-minded about religions growing up in general?
Yeah, I just like I still believe in God, and I still believe in a lot of the Islamic traditions, but you know, it's not dogma, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, the teachings itself are very pure, but they get distorted.
Yeah.
Like people turn it into something else. People turn it into something they can commercialize. Like, oh, you know, you go to church, don't give money, and you'll go to heaven. And then they portray God as like someone, something to be feared. Be God fearing instead of be God loving.
It's a great way to create control over people.
Yeah, so there's like a lot of like, it's a beautiful, like all religions at their essence are very like, you know, they're founded in their pure, very pure intentions, but they've gotten skewed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really important to have some sort of faith.
Yeah. Did you ever read the Magdalene manuscript?
No, I haven't.
It's really fascinating with like Christ teaching, like Christ was actually practicing. Now for Christians, this would probably be blasphemy, but sex magic with Magdalene and Mary Magdalene, like tantric sex magic. And it goes into like how he was doing, you know, all the work to basically raise the energy up his chakras. And I mean, because it makes sense. He was, you know, very much like of the East, right? Of the Eastern traditions. And so it makes sense that he would have known about like the yogic practices.
Yeah. I think in the, what book was it? The Autobiography of a Yogi or something. Yeah. They talk about like one of the great masters actually meeting Jesus Christ. Like the one that's in the hills. I can't remember like what his name is.
Oh. In the book, really?
Yeah. They talk. Oh, wow. I think so, or I might have seen it somewhere else. Like Jesus Christ definitely, like, or I mean, they allegedly have connections to the Hermetic god Thoth, and also the yogi in the mountains that mentored Paramhansa Yogananda's guru.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I can't remember the name of.
I mean, yeah, that makes, you know, sense. Like he was learning from.
What's his name? Okay, I remember his picture, but I don't remember his name. It's this person. Babaji. Have you read the book?
Wait, that's Yogananda, right?
No, that's not. This is Yogananda. But this is like, they kind of look similar. Wait, this is like a picture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is Babaji. So this is like, this is Yogananda. This is Yogananda's guru. This is Yogananda's guru's guru. This is Lahiri Mahasaya. And this is Mahavatar Babaji, who is this guy's guru.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. And he was the one that studied with Christ.
Yeah, Jesus. Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, I mean.
Allegedly. I don't know. But this is the SRF.
I mean, yeah, because the Indian saints, they already know how to leave their, like, I've read stories that they, you know, can leave their body and come back. So it's like that idea of resurrection, you know. Like they know how to do it.
Yeah, that's crazy. So how did you, like, what made you decide to, was there like a story on why you decided to get into, why you're so fascinated about masculine feminine dynamics in relationships?
I think David Data, the Way of the Superior Man, really got me into it, and it just made so much sense once I heard it. I was like, oh gosh, like I've, you know, been more in my masculine in relationships. And I think it, like, it just, like, every woman that hears about it, it's, you're just like, oh yeah, of course, this makes perfect sense. Like, this is
really
what...
Because I feel like when most women hear about this, they become really resistant to it. They're like, I need to be, you know, the go-getter, like I need to, you know, earn the bread and be independent. That's what, at least that's what, when I talk to most of my women friends, that's what I feel they're kind of like. They feel proud to be the boss bitch, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's, I mean, I think that's good. Yeah, to feel, but it's interesting that it's funny, after having like my business success, you know, with reality creation, it's interesting how, like, I could feel it, how I wanted to start to use my career success to validate my worth, which is coming from masculine energy.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not going to work with masculine men. They don't care how much money I make. Like a man truly embodying his masculine doesn't care if I'm making a 50K month or still struggling. But when I'm using that to validate my worth to a man and be like, oh yeah, I'm a boss bitch, I make all this, you know, money, and like, dude, I don't need a
men
man.
Don't give a shit about how much money women make.
Yeah, men don't care. And but so that's the wounding for the feminine, because she's doing it as a way to compensate for where she's not connected to her feminine worth. And so it's a way to compensate for worth. It's like I over-identified with masculine worth.
Right.
And so interesting to have my first experience of like, oh, no wonder why women want to do this, because it's like, it's just, it's like right there. It's like, well, come on, shouldn't you, you should want me, because I'm like, I'm rich and like I make my own money, but men don't care.
Yeah. I think like the men who care about that don't have money.
Yeah.
You know, and so like they have a desire for money, they don't have it, and then they'll care. But like the men who are already, you know, kind of successful, they wouldn't care about how much money a woman makes. That would make them more insecure, I feel, like if they're not truly embodied in their masculine, like if a woman's making more money than them.
More. I definitely, like, I can't date a guy if he has to be making more money than me for me to have the level of respect and surrender. Like, he
really
needs to, yeah, I could not date a guy who's like, yeah.
Interesting.
I mean,
would
maybe,
it depend on the guy though, like what the guy's like?
As long as, or if I'm making more than him, which given like now where I'm at, I could like be making more than a guy who's, but he has to have a strong vision. Like he might be in a corporate job, but like, he's like, okay, I have this startup going and I know, like I have a vision for where it's going. It has to be like a really big vision for me to want to surrender to him. Right. Cause it's like, if I'm committing to him, I'm surrendering to his leadership.
Yeah. Right.
For the relationship and where the relationship is going. And, you know, like that's, yeah. So that's also part of why I chose a job like I did that has so much freedom, so that I could, you know, like if a man wants to, like if he has to move, then that's what the feminine does. She moves for where, you know, she follows his lead, right?
Mm.
If he has to move. But a lot of women, so on their masculine side, are like, nope, I have to, she chooses her career over the relationship. That's a woman more on her masculine side, right? I've always chosen relationships over career. Even like, and it's funny, even my career is all about relationships. So I'm very on
You're
myself.
Literally choosing relationships in your career too.
Yeah, exactly.
So you talked about something interesting. You said the feminine has to surrender to the masculine. I feel like when you say the word feminine has to surrender to the masculine, and when a lot of women hear that, they might be resistant at first. How do you kind of deal with that? Like when someone comes in and like maybe listens to some of your ideas at first and you're like, you have to surrender to the masculine.
First of all, is to remember that surrender is not submission. Submission is actually the wounded feminine, and she's doing it from a place of disconnected from her worth and power. And there is, so yeah, not to confuse submission with, you can submit in the bedroom. Submission, that's like BDSM, right? Where you like really, it's very polarizing, where you have the dom and the sub.
Yeah.
Right. And most people think of like polarity as it's polarity. I mean, yeah, BDSM is polarity at its extreme, right? It's
right.
The two, but dom, like the dom controlling dom, like that's a shadow aspect of the masculine, right? So it's fun to play with the shadow in the bedroom with BDSM, right? If you wanted to, if you're into that, but it's not the healthy expression of the masculine man. He's not dominating you in the relationship. He's just, he's the one that's embodying those leadership qualities. And the feminine is still leading, but I would say she doesn't lead. That's more the masculine, but she guides through the quality of her heart. So the masculine's always responding.
More like a supporter role. Like you're making the leader better. And also like, I think leadership too is just like, you're serving, right? Like when I think of leadership, I'm like, I'm serving my woman. I'm serving my family. They're relying on me and I'm serving them.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, that's hot for any woman to hear. Like, whoa, a man who's serving me. Like, and then women are like, oh my God, teach me feminine energy.
That's how you sell them. Find me a man who'll serve me.
Yeah, exactly. They all want that.
Right. Okay, so let's go back to joining the program. So when you were at 5K a month, why did you decide to join Reality Mastery?
I heard an interview you did with a guy who like had just started hitting 20, 25K months. I remember being on a hike and I kept resonating with your content because you're into like Neville Goddard and all the manifesting stuff. And I don't know why, like, I just kept watching your videos. But then I knew that the magic is always when you invest in yourself, right? The transformation, you take that leap and invest in yourself. And then I had the discovery call with Adam, and I just like, I knew it was my next level. It was, and it was funny that even my ex, who I had right before I signed up, he is Persian, but he kind of like reminded me of Adam. And it was like, instead of like looking to my ex to save me, you know, from like my ex, and it was funny, I wanted to manifest a really rich guy. So I said, semi-retired hedge fund manager. And that's what my ex was. But he was like controlling, because I manifested him from this kind of savior victim energy. And then I saw Adam and I was like, oh, okay, Adam's the real savior that's going to help me, that I need to say yes to.
I love
Adam
that.
And Fozzie.
Well, we're glad we can serve you.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely you did.
Okay, so I suppose what were some of your biggest takeaways that really made a change? You know,
It was really the mindset stuff. That module on mindset was like what really just starting to see like how, you know, focusing on so you have your affirmation, right? But then you focus on confirmation of it, right? It's just like the more that I was like focused on what I wanted, focusing on the positive, it transformed my results in sales calls, and just like attracting, because I would just get stuck in limiting beliefs so quickly, like, oh, another person who, you know, can't afford the program, or another person who,
and then feeling like a victim almost, like blaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, oh, this is never going to work. Oh my gosh. Right. And it was just, yeah, and then even if I had like a discovery call that would go, you know, that wouldn't close, I would normally probably get really stuck in the energy of, oh my gosh, this is not working. But just with the support of your program and Adam, and it was like, oh, okay, it's a numbers thing. Like I started to just see like, okay, nice. This is my closure, just like not
focus on the numbers.
Yeah. Not internalize beliefs about it. Focus on the numbers.
Yeah. That was really one of the first takeaways I had, you know, cause, or else if you don't track the numbers, you're getting phased by every single little like outcome that happens on every single call.
Yeah.
And you know, if you don't look at yearly numbers, then you're like struggling month to month. You're like, oh no, this month is bad. Next month might be bad. Every month is going to be bad. Like the mind always likes to go to dark places.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
How did you get control over that apart from just numbers? You know, were there any tools that you used apart from, you know, affirmations and confirmations too?
Just having the support of the community really was like, and to be able to reach out to someone and say, you know, this is where, and just like to hear somebody else tell you like, look, if they said no, the next call likely going to be a yes. You know, your next yes is coming.
Right. Did you connect with anyone in particular in the community?
No, it just was really nice to have Adam's support mostly. He was one. Yeah. We had, he really helped me with sales calls too. I think it was just like mastering the sales calls. I didn't.
Yeah, I heard you did a lot of sales work with Adam. And I suspect a lot of it's like around the mindset too, like what you're focusing on the call, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing too is I've learned now, it's just, I think what I've learned is to see the value in just holding space for people. Like people will come to me and just like have, you know, dump all their relationship problems on a discovery call. And all I have to do is just give them undivided attention and ask questions, dive deeper, become really curious. And like, they just get so much value in being seen and held in that. They're like, oh, I really need support. Like, give me this, what's next?
You listen to your prospective clients. Exactly. No one does that.
Yeah, and not focused on trying to make a sale, right? I just like let go of like trying to close them, and like there was no insecurity around that. It was just like, oh, let me just hear your problem. Let me just try to solve what's coming up and diagnose what's going on here. And then I just started to become really fascinated too. Like, oh, the diagnosing them is really a fun part of the discovery call. Like, okay, we dive into their relationship patterns and then a little bit in their childhood history and try to see like where these patterns are coming from. So to give them a little taste of what they'll get in the program.
Right. Yeah. That was crucial for me to realize as well, because I think a lot of people who get into sales calls and they fail is because they get into the call with the focus on, I need to close this.
Yes. Yeah.
Is this going to close or no? Is this going to close or no? Instead of, I'm going to find the problem, I'm going to listen, and I'm going to see how I can help.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it makes sense, I'll make the offer. You know, like it's the focus on the process versus the outcome.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. That was so helpful to hear that. Even you talk about that in the videos, and it's like just that reminder again and again. I just have to keep going back to hearing that.
So 5K a month, 25K a month, 50K a month.
Two 25K months, 50K a month. I think this month was maybe 30. I still just have to get over the limiting belief that like just that I can hold this many, like, more people, that I can, like, you know, have a call with like 30 people and it will be okay. Which I think I can. I mean, I had one woman who, you know, she basically was like only on a few calls and called in her man in 2 months, because the program guides you through enough inner work that you're doing on your own, like self-healing.
Yeah.
So the calls are really just like for support. I don't think they have to be as in-depth as I thought.
You should join the mastermind.
I know.
Yeah. I think you could really use YouTube and restructuring your offer, I guess. Yeah, I think you're the perfect stage for it.
Restructuring the offer. You focus on restructuring the offer, yeah, and just.
Yeah, because then you'll be able to handle more and like maybe even hire key people if it made sense. You know, like coaches or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. I do. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later, I guess. If someone were on the fence, right, they're at 5K a month, at the exact same situation you're in, anxious, getting frustrated on sales calls, clearly a limiting belief, clearly a mindset problem, they're considering joining, but they're skeptical. They've tried many different programs. They've tried all sorts of personal development stuff. What would you say to them?
Just jump, do it. Do it scared. Yeah, you've got to invest in yourself. It's always, your next level is always, not, the free content does not land until you invest in yourself. It's everything, all the juicy gems are, like, I'm not even sure too. It's like, sometimes I think I've heard other people say it's the placebo effect too. It just felt like it was
everything's like, a placebo.
Yeah, it totally felt like that.
There's a psychological component to everything, right? So everything's a placebo.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you can see, I mean, and looking back, it's funny. Now that I've invested, I can listen to your free content with a new perspective, new. Yeah. But it's not going to change. Like, you can listen to all the free content you want, and you're just not going to get the transformation until you invest in yourself.
Yeah, there has to be some sort of a transaction that happens. I don't know why. Like, I totally agree with you, because I've noticed that too. I used to watch a lot of people's free content and I wouldn't get results. But then as soon as I invested, there's like a different level of energy exchange. The transaction is an exchange of energy, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, in the ancient days, the shamans would make an offering to the gods. You know, like when they would do their rituals, they would make an offering. What is the offering? What are you trading? What are you transacting?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's like almost like subconsciously we can't receive until we've actually had that energetic exchange. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And then you become open to receiving. You can't give to someone who's
not
open.
There it is. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
For sure. All you got to do, people, just write Quasi a check and there, boom, you'll have your 50K months. Trust me, it's worth it. It's totally worth it. The returns are worth it.
Cool. Hi, Vanessa. Thank you so much for joining. I'll include your socials in the description below. I had a blast speaking to you about.
Me too. That's great. That was really fun.
I learned a lot today.
I did too. Wow, that's great. That was such a fun interview.
Yeah.
I love the natural style that you do interviews.
Yeah, I've never done it like this. We usually just like do the, hey, welcome, this interview, this, and do like an intro. But I figured let's free ball it, see what happens.
Great. I love it.
All right.